Everybody needs a set of notes. We're going to look at Ecclesiastes chapter 2. We'll read at the beginning chapter 2, verse 24 and 20 through verse 26. I don't think this will be a normal sermon. It is really not meant to be. So it's going to require a little bit more of you at the beginning and a lot less of you at the end. The beginning is the hard part, both hard to read and hard to hear. Ecclesiastes chapter 2, verse 24 through 26. Everybody find some notes. Now, let me just say this to everyone. The sermon is on the back half of the notes. The first half of the notes is the introduction. You'll understand once we start because this has a very specific purpose. All right, let's stand, please. Everybody got notes that needs them. This is the third week of introduction to the book of Ecclesiastes. If you are capable of memorizing, look at me, everybody, and I do mean memorizing six words, you will have a very good start on the book of Ecclesiastes. And when I say memorize, you're not going to understand the book without them. You're going to be reading Polish if you don't speak Polish. Because you're going to dive in and you're just not going to know what you're talking about. And you'll be one of those people that quote to me, well, the Bible says, don't be overly righteous and don't be overly wicked. Not having a clue what the Bible is talking about, because you can't just pluck a verse out of Ecclesiastes. Ecclesiastes is a very systematic dealing with some things. We'll look at those six words in a moment. Chapter 2, verse 24, please. The sermon part of this, the exhortation, will be the conclusion of chapter 2, which is this. Solomon says, there is nothing better. This is one of seven or so many conclusions in the book. There's nothing better for a man. Doesn't mean a male. Adam means a human. There's nothing better for a human than that he or she should eat and drink. And by the way, we're going to hear this again two or three other times. And that he or she should, in the King James is better here, make his soul enjoy good in his labor. You need to force yourself. Look at me, everybody. I'm going to say this again later. You need to force yourself to see the good in your work. You know what work is? Work. I'll say it again later. If you don't learn to like to work, you will be a miserable person. It is impossible to make somebody happy that doesn't like to work. Impossible. He says, and by the way, nephesh is in there. Cause your soul, it's a hithil for you that know Hebrew, cause your soul to learn to see the good in your work, which means that's something you've got to do sooner or later. Let's read on. He goes on to say, this also I saw, and I love this, that it was from the hand of God. Verse 25 is a little ambiguous. I'm not going to focus on it. He says, for who can eat and who else can hasten hereunto more than I? Verse 26, we'll focus on this a lot. For God hath given, or giveth, excuse me, for God giveth to a man that is good, in his sight, wisdom and knowledge and joy. But to the sinner, three times it's going to say give here, natan in Hebrew. He giveth travail to gather and to heap up, that he may give, third time of give in verse 26, to him that is good before him, or someone that follows the Lord is the idea. This also is vanity and vexation of spirit. We're going to introduce the sermon. By the way, everybody sees your notes. This is the purpose of the notes. For you to read along, you write anything in the margin or nothing in the margin. I don't care. All I want you to do is to understand You can't read chapter 2 by picking 3 verses and going to town, because you don't understand the verses unless you understand juxtaposition. The first 23 verses are pretty painful. Juxtaposed with some very good things. Now you got the book of Ecclesiastes. By the way, if you don't understand what I've just said, chapter 3, the first 8 verses, is juxtaposition. There's a time to be born, and there's a time, and they're juxtaposed, the first 8 verses. That's the whole book. So I'm trying to teach that this morning. I won't say as much about it in the future. Let's pray together. Father, help me. I need lots of help this morning, because I really want to get down to really just kind of unraveling a chapter to say, what in the world? Help me to be able to clearly speak. Many of us, why do we do these same things over and over? Why do we do the same dumb thing over and over? Why do we do that which other people have done since Adam and Eve, and it's failed, but we do it thinking we'll succeed? I think that's the question. Help me this morning as I share simple ideas and we get to the heart, which is a beautiful text. It's the good side of the juxtaposition. Help me in Jesus' name. Amen. You may be seated. This is all in your notes at the top. Here are the 6 words. Everybody ready? The book begins, sorry, I left it out in the notes. In chapter 1, verse 2, it ends, you might want to write this down, chapter 12, verse 8, the book begins and ends with this statement. The quote, vanity of vanity. You say, why is that important? Because all through the book, he begins this way, he ends this way, saying, friends, I'm going to get ahead of myself. On this earth, not thinking about eternity, there's a lot of frustration. There's a lot of you never really accomplish what you want. You can't quite get it, grab it, hold on to it. You get it for a second and it's gone. Look at me, friend. That's how he begins and ends the book. And why are you struggling with that? He's telling you this is life under the sun. Vanity of vanities. Vanity, that word hevel, means something to do with a vapor. So it's trying to like catching a bubble. Can't quite do it. Then it moves to the question. By the way, the question will be today and throughout the entire book. And here's the question. What profit? What gain? What advantage is there under the sun? By the way, it's what he says. It's a question. He's going to repeatedly ask that question as he goes through the book. Then there's the quandary. I'm not going to talk about that this morning. This was all the first week sermon. The quandary is simply this. Life seems like it's a cycle. Seemed like when I got up this morning, I went in and I had to brush my teeth. How many times have you brushed your teeth? Do you realize you do the same thing every day? I made breakfast. Do you kind of, after a while, feel like that's the quandary? And there's more to it than that, but that's part of it. You can hear the first sermon online. Last week, I introduced the quest. What's the quest? Well, he says, you know, I'm going to go out here. Look up here. I'm going to go out here and explore everything. If last week was bad, this week is 100-fold worse. Worse? That's not the right word. More intensive. He's going to take that a whole nother notch. So those are the first ideas. And by the way, right through the first chapter, there's a quote, beginning, ending of the book. There's a question. He's going to keep asking that question in different ways. There's the quandary of life here. There's the quest. Last week, I ended by talking about the qualification. This whole book is qualified by certain phrases under the sun. Everyone look at me. It is not talking about heaven. Yesterday, Pastor Kwok, it was beautiful to talk to your mother about heaven. But your mother also experienced not some good things right here, correct? Look at me. Most of Ecclesiastes, Solomon tries not to talk about heaven. He doesn't succeed. But he tries. Because where do you live? Where do you live? You say, man, I got some plans. Look at me. You're the first person that never had those plans. We'll see how they go. That's under So we're down here. He doesn't succeed at that, but he tries. A couple of other phrases, we've already mentioned vanity, vanity of vanity. Also, King James says vexation of spirit. He's going to say that a lot, meaning this just irritates us. It's frustrating. Or other translations, I'm going to get into the Hebrew of it, could also be the other way. It's like you're grasping for the wind, which is saying the same thing as vanity, basically. Then there's the juxtaposition. Juxtaposition is what? Everyone look at me. Gotta have it. Solomon goes, does this. He tells you bad news, then he tells you good news. He tells you, don't do this. Doesn't always say it that way. Do this. And he just sticks them together, and he doesn't explain how they work. And when you get done, sometimes you're like, yuck. Well, that's the whole point of living under the sun. Juxtaposition, and of course, wisdom. Today is the quiz. I got a question for you. Do you remember back in your school days taking quizzes? What was your least favorite kind of quiz? See, you know that, right? A pop quiz. I can still remember walking in, take everything. The moment they said, take everything off your desk, you had a big panic attack right then. It's like, oh no, there's a quiz coming. Now, folks, we're going to go through verse by verse, but hear me. Chapter 2, the entire chapter is a quiz. One difference. There's not a teacher giving Solomon the quiz. Solomon's quizzing himself. He's testing himself. He's giving himself the quiz. That's where we're going today. So chapter 2, verse 1 is where he says this. Chapter 2, verse 1, he says, I said in my heart, go to now, I will prove thee, I will test thee with mirth. Therefore, and he goes on. Chapter 2, verse 3, he says, I saw it in my heart. Chapter 2, verse 15, then said I in my heart. Boy, he's going to take this quiz to another level, testing and proving, but it's not going to be a teacher saying, clear your desk. Solomon himself is going to do the work and take the quiz himself, proving it. That's the whole chapter in your notes. Solomon takes this quest a major step further than what we usually are willing or able to do. He is going to prove, which means to test, to try, to prove, to quiz yourself. He's going to apply wisdom to it. Everyone look at me. If you do something, how do you know it's going to fail or it's going to succeed? How about this? This morning I got out of bed. I went into the restroom. I was brushing my teeth. I didn't do it this morning. Some days I do. I'll turn on YouTube. Inevitably on YouTube, if I put music on, it does a song and then it goes to a commercial. And always the commercial is something like, I don't know how it knows that I am very petite. It'll be a commercial about, this is the secret for weight loss that they are not telling you. There's a secret mix that a PhD from the University of, in a place you never heard of, you get those crazy things. By the way, here's the problem. First of all, those irritate me. You say, what's the way to lose weight? Stop eating so much. Here's the problem. I don't want to stop eating so much. This isn't hard, folks. Friends, if you listen to stupidity, then you test it. Man, if you do this, the weight's just going. My favorite one, Mike Hall. Mike doesn't have this problem, but it's my favorite. You can lose weight without exercise, without changing your diet. Where's that at? I want that. By the way, I could test that. That's a lie. All right. So Solomon is actually going to test what he suggests. All right. By the way, you write anything down on the right you want. I'm just going to walk through the verses. Chapter 2, verses 1 to 3. This is where we begin. And this is where the testing begins. He said, I said in my heart, go to now. That's just old English. In Hebrew, it's no better. I pray that you know, it's kind of like I pray. It's a polite way of saying, let's check this out. He says, I will prove thee. And the King James says, with mirth. He says, therefore enjoy pleasure and behold. See, here's his testing. You know, if you try to laugh your way into happiness, it works for a minute, but it's also vanity. You won't ever grab it. Verse 2, I said of laughter, it's mad. And of mirth, what doeth it? How's it benefit me? I sought in my heart to give myself unto wine. By the way, friend, this is what I wrote in my notes. His first three verses, Solomon does this. Solomon simply does what I call, don't throw anything or hate me, lower class ideas of becoming happy. I'm going to party myself to happiness. I'm going to drink myself to happiness. I'm going to have so much fun, I'll be happy. That works for tonight. And guess what it becomes after that? Look at me. Vanity. It doesn't work. That's his first thesis. I'm going to prove this. I'm going to test this. It's simply the party life. Or if you prefer, you do realize people do different things for happiness. Some people, a certain class of people, find happiness through video games, TV, because listen, if the first 3 hours of TV doesn't make you happy, the next three will. If the first video game that you played all night doesn't make you happy, tomorrow night you'll be happy. Well, Solomon says, that's ridiculous. Let's continue here. He doesn't mention video games, by the way. So he said in verse 3, I sought in my heart to give myself unto wine, yet acquainting my heart with wisdom. He's still holding on to the wisdom so he can test things. And to lay hold on folly till I might see. Here's that question. What was the good for the sons of men which they should do under the heaven all the days of their life? So that's his first. I'm going to test things. And I'm just going to test the normal things that kids graduate from high school. They discover that their parents aren't at college. They discover drinking. Brilliant. By the way, you're the first idiot that ever discovered getting drunk. We've had kids, look at me, right in this room, leave here, go to college, never go to church at college, and guess what they do? They get drunk with their buddies. Because we all know that's never been tried before. Is my cynicism coming through? Is my sarcasm coming through? We've been trying this from time immemorial, and Solomon says so. Let's continue to the next stage. By the way, the next stage is manly. 2:4-10 is very manly. I call this conspicuous consumption. See, Solomon had some wherewithal that you and I don't have. Notice, and by the way, the King James, it feels like you're getting hit over the head with I and me. He says this, I made me great works. I builded me houses. I planted me vineyards. I made me gardens and orchards. I planted trees in them of all kinds of fruit. By the way, you get a lot of this I and me, meaning I did it for me and I did it by me. He just hammers you. Look what I did. Hey, look up here. We're way past the dumb person that graduates from high school and thinks, I'm going to find happiness in getting drunk. This is Solomon in his glory. I'm going to build palaces. I'm going to build buildings. Have you been to England, Scotland, Europe, seen palaces, seen castles, and seen gardens that you look out there? That's what he's talking about that. He's talking about, I built pools. I have everything. This is serious. He goes on. And by the way, he did it all by himself. I did it. Me. For me. We continue. Verse 6, I made me pools of water to water wherewith the wood that bringeth forth trees. Otherwise, he built a pool so the trees had water. Verse 7, I got me servants and maidens and had servants born in my house. Friend, the word ebed, one of the words for in Hebrew for servant or slave, it's a wide meaning. Let me give you. Years ago, the program on PBS, some of it I loved, some of it I didn't. Downton Abbey. The thing that surprised me the most about the program was, are you listening? Not the stupid plots, which were terrible. What surprised me was how many people it took to keep that house up. It took an army. And the people that were the owners didn't do any work. Everybody else was scurrying. I mean, they were doing the, you know, washing things, cleaning things, fixing things, taking out the ashes, cutting the grass, keeping the forest. He's saying, you know what? I am so powerful that I built all this. And of course, I got to have somebody to do it. I'm not going to do the work. So I got people, whether they were hired or whether they were true slaves or whether they were somewhere in between, makes no difference. He said, I did all of that. He goes on. So I got me servants and maidens and had servants born in my house. Also, I had great possessions, King James says, of great and small cattle. That is accurately translated, but it means nothing to us. The great cattle is what we call a cow. The small ones could be a goat, could be a sheep, it could be a smaller animal. You know, the big ones and the little ones. I got them all. He goes on to say, I have more of those than all that were in Jerusalem before me, not only David, but also the pagan kings that were there and some believing kings that were there long before. He says, I excelled everybody. Verse 8, I gathered me also silver and gold and the peculiar treasures of kings. Friends, look at me. I'm going to give you a peculiar treasure of kings. Hey, up here, everybody. You ever heard of a Fabergé egg? If you haven't heard of a Fabergé egg, look it up online. They were made for the royal house in Russia. They're an egg shape. That's a peculiar treasure of kings. No one could afford one of those things. It's not an egg, by the way. It looks like an egg. You have to look that up. That's what he's talking about. Things that nobody else could get. He goes on to say, he says, I not only had peculiar treasures of kings and of the provinces, he says, I also got me singers and women singers. Well, you didn't turn your CD player on. You say, Pastor, I don't use a CD player. I use the internet. He didn't have either one. Look at me. Do you realize until about 100 years ago, everybody on earth had three choices with music. Either you learned to sing and play musical instruments yourself, or if you were wealthy, you hired an orchestra, or you had no music. He said, I have enough money that I hired men singers, women singers. I had it all. Okay. The King James says, and the delights of the sons of men. Every new translation will translate this differently. The Hebrew in your notes is not important except for you to know those are the same word repeated twice. The second word is feminine plural. It is a way of saying many. Most translations don't say musical instruments, and by the way, we still don't know what the words mean. They say, because they're drawing from Solomon and from the text, they'll say something like this. The delights of the sons of men, such as many concubines, concubines on top of concubines. By the way, did Solomon have concubines? Answer the question, did he have women? Guys, look up here. If you were a wealthy person and you could afford a girlfriend, you would be special. Solomon had about 1,000 total. So when you go to experiment, I'm going to be happy by doing this. Solomon's saying, I've already done that. Look at me. I not only went on the quest, but I brought wisdom with me, and I am testing this along the way. I'm going to see if this really does the trick. That's the idea. Does this really make me happy? He goes on to say, so if it means many concubines, which the phraseology could be that, certainly it's the way it's constructed, it would be something like this. I got me men singers and women singers, and the delights of the sons of men, such as many concubines, and that of all sorts. Verse 9. So I was great, and increased more than all that were before me in Jerusalem. Also, because see, I'm testing this, my wisdom remained with me. Verse 10, and whatsoever my eye desired, I kept not from them. That's, friend, none of us can say that. We don't have the power. We don't have the money. We don't have the position. So let me say it this way. When the guy you're looking at, look at me, please. When I walk into some place and I see a brand new Lamborghini, two thoughts come across my mind. Well, three thoughts. Number one, I'd like to have that. You say, why would you like to have that? Well, that's the first thought. The second thought is, I can't even afford the tires on the car. My third thought is, Mike, this is you and me. How am I getting out of that thing? I would have to buy a crane. Do you ever see how you have to slide in this thing like it's a glove? This body isn't coming out. Can I say this? Solomon could buy it. He was also the king. He could have somebody make it for him. I'm not talking about a car. Whatever he wanted. Guys, are you listening? Do you realize he's going on a quest, but he's adding a layer, the quiz. I'm going to find out if this makes me happy. Look at me. Have you ever noticed somebody that is immoral, that their immorality doesn't make them happy? Have you ever noticed somebody that buys stuff, their stuff they have doesn't make them happy? Why do we keep doing it? Well, that's a good question. Let's keep reading. Verse 10, whatsoever my eyes desired, I kept not from them. I withheld not my heart from anything that I thought would make me happy, any joy. Now, the positive is in the next line, a little bit. He says, for my heart rejoiced in all my labor. We'll come back to this later. That's a positive. The actual work made him happy. But when he's in the middle of buying and building and all this stuff, it's all about me. When he looks back and when he weighs this, he realizes, no, the work is what makes you happy, not the stuff. Well, he goes on to say in verse 11, then I looked on all the works that my hands had wrought and all the labor that I had labored to do, and behold, what? This is the end of the quiz here for this part. It's all vanity. It's all vexation of spirit. And he answers that question. Remember, there was no profit under the sun. So after all of this stuff, I got it all. I am very reluctant to mention people's names in this room. There is a guy, for you old geezers, there's a guy that used to be married to one of my personal heroes, Jane Fonda. And the fact that you aren't laughing means you don't know who it is and you don't know. This person was married to Jane Fonda many years ago. They divorced. I can't stand Jane. I like Jane Fonda about as much as I like Putin. Okay? Pretty similar to me. Here's the point. He said, oh, by the way, I think he is the number one landowner in America, or he used to be. Did you hear that? He owns more farms, properties than anyone else in America. And a while back, he's an old man if he's still alive. He's got to be close to 90. A while back, he had a girl at each place. So he'd stay here for a while, then he'd go here with that, and then he'd go here. But the problem was the girls were all walangutak. They were all brainless. So he would go there, and there's a pretty woman there, and there's a nice piece of property, and there's a big house. But the problem is you got to talk to somebody. Can I say this to you? Why do we keep doing this over and over? By the way, most young people don't get to this. They're happy with, I'm going to get drunk because everybody knows that makes you cool and it really solves your problems. He's way beyond that. Conspicuous consumption, friend. No profit under the sun. So every question is answered. It goes right back to chapter one. He's giving you the quote, he's giving you the question, and he's giving you one of the qualifications that it's vanity of vanity, it's vexation of spirit. You're chasing the wind. Verse 12. And I turned myself in verse 12. He says, I turned myself to behold wisdom and madness and folly. For what can the man do that cometh after the king, even that which has been already done? That sounds a lot like the quandary in chapter 1. I will just simply say this. Verse 12 says, I'm going to continue the quest, and I'm going to continue the quiz. I'm going to just look in different directions. Verse 13 and 14, wisdom. You say, everybody look at me, Pastor Warren. I am the smartest person I have had in this room. People tell me I'm the smartest person you've ever met. Okay, I'm going to concede that you are. You are. Let's see what he's got to say about that. Thank you. Verse 13. By the way, I wasn't lying. I've had people say that. I want to be clear. I can still see the blonde-headed idiot that told me this. It's been 20 years. He told me this. Wow. He says, then I saw, as I continued my quest and quizzing my quest, that wisdom excelleth folly, as far as light excelleth darkness. Okay, so yeah, you know, you'd rather be wise than a fool. Yes, of course, it's like having the lights on or not having the lights on. Verse 14, he says, the wise man's eyes are in his head, meaning if you have eyes, you have wisdom, you can see to some degree. He goes on to say, but the fool walketh in darkness. So, simply stated, verse 13 and 14, at least the first half, tells you wisdom is better than folly. Yes, of course. Well, then you come to 14b and 15, and he says, but, you know, I got to keep adding, but I myself perceived that one event happeneth to them all. Everyone look at me. What's the one event? Look up here. What's the one event? What's the one event? Look up here, young people. What's the one event that's going to happen to you and to me? Well, then his question is, well, if just because I'm wiser than you, how am I better than you? We're all going to, same thing's going to happen to us. By the way, this is painful stuff. For all of you that sleep through this, you'll be on the quest. You'll be doing the same stupid thing that Solomon's already done. Because the whole purpose of this is to tell you, this is not where the action is. This is not where, you say, I'm going to be smarter. And I always like people that are smarter than others. I am team wisdom. Wisdom was created by me and ends with me. Okay. Let's continue. So he says in verse 14, I myself perceived also that one event happeneth to them all. Then said I in my heart, as it happens to the fool, so it happens even to me. And why was I then more wise? Then I said in my heart, see, he's testing this. You understand? This also is vanity. Verse 16. Then he takes it another notch further. I don't like verse 16 and 17. He says, you know, there is no remembrance of the wise more than the fool. Forever. Seeing that which now is, the days to come shall be forgotten. And how dieth a wise man? Same as the fool. Next page. Therefore I hated life, because the work which is wrought under the sun is grievous unto me, for all is vanity and vexation of spirit. Friends, all he says there is, yes, wisdom is better than being a fool, but at the same time, wisdom won't solve all of your problems. I wrote some things down. Listen, friends, I am happy if you're a smart person. I'd rather you be a wise person than be a fool. I've met both, but look at me. Some of the wisest people who ever lived. Who was the wisest man who ever lived, humanly speaking? How did he end up as a fool? By the way, friends, and no matter what, we're going to come to the end of life. So there are things that matter more than that, is the idea. Well, the next section, we're not going to read it all. But all he's going to say, starting in, well, verse 16 and 17, I missed that point. Things won't be remembered. So even if you're wise, you won't be remembered in 20 years or 50 years or 100 years. And then in verse 18 to the last section of the last section of the quest and the quiz, he says, worse than all of that. Hey, look up here. Most of us never have to worry about this because we don't have anything. What if your name is Jeff Bezos? What if your name is Bill Gates? The thing that's happening as you increase in age, you're starting to wonder who's going to get it. And that's, he's then in this mess of, well, how do I know the person that comes after me is going to take care of this or is going to destroy this? So that's where he goes. Verse 18 and 19, and we'll move on to the sermon. He says, therefore I hated all my labor which I had taken under the sun, because I should leave it unto the man that shall be after me. And by the way, friend, everybody's going to have a successor. You're not taking anything with you. Do we all agree with that? Nothing. You're going to have someone that succeeds you. And my goodness, Tim, the best thing about the funeral outside of all the Christianity was your mother had nothing to give anybody. You know why? you go to funerals and you have people, the whole funeral's wondering, I want mom's. That's his question. What's going to happen? And he doesn't know. He doesn't know. Well, verse 24, 25, and 26 gives you a better way. This is called juxtaposition. Juxtaposition. And in this passage, I'll preach on this again in another text. He starts introducing us by means of, well, you could do the party life. That doesn't work. You could do the building life and having everything under the sun. That won't work. Or you could be the wisest. That won't work. So then where do you find joy, meaning, purpose, and significance? He calls it, I call it a better way. In verse 24, he says, there is nothing better for a man that he should eat and drink. In your notes, he is basically encouraging us to do this. This is Ralph Warren's language. Enjoy the small life. Enjoy the small life. Under the verse, I ask, what might we call this? What else? I'll give you other terms. The normal life. The day-to-day life. I like this. These are all mine. I like this one the best. Look at me, please. The slow down life. Jenny, our first trip to Scotland. We went to Scotland for almost 2 weeks our first time, 1999. It seemed like it was yesterday. It's 26 years ago. Wow. Our 20th anniversary. We were someplace in Scotland. It was either then or it was 3 years later with Mom. I forget which. There's a couple. They have a couple of littler kids. Probably older than Ezra and Emily's children, but not a lot. You know, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, somewhere in there, the kids. Lovely couple from America. We were on a boat going someplace, and we asked them, you know, we're being polite. You know, you talk to people. What y'all doing? They said, well, we're seeing, are you guys ready? Ireland, Scotland, and England in 1 week. Thank you, daughter. You at least had a response. The other people are sleeping. By the way, how much England, Ireland, and Scotland do you think you're going to see in 1 week? That's most people's foolishness. It's the reason they're never happy. You're not happy by big things. You're happy by the small experiences. So Jenny and I, our first trip to Scotland, I won't get into the driving. Jenny, you'll remember, we drove from Aberdeen, Scotland, down to Stonehaven. The first night, it's time to eat. We're in Scotland. Remember the meal you had 3 weeks ago? No. We don't remember anything. Why do I remember this? Our first night, you know what? We went into a pub. We went into a pub to get fish and chips because it had the sign, fish and chips. You know, a public house in England. Don't think tavern. It wasn't a tavern. Jenny and I go in. The guy greets us. He says, where are you from? We told him, where are you from? Oh, you're from the provinces. The colonies. By the way, don't call an American part of the colonies. He was joking. And then he asked us, what in the world are you doing in Scotland? We go to America because we want sun. But all I remember is we got fish and chips. You know what we did? We carried our fish and chips and a little bit of vinegar. We walked down by the sea, the North Sea. We sat down and we had a wonderful meal looking at extreme beauty. And when we ate as much food as we want, we had helpers called the seagulls. Can I say this? Look at me. Here's what's going to make you happy. The small life. Did you hear me? The simple life. Do you know the reason most people are never happy on a vacation? Woo! But the problem is you miss the whole point of the vacation. It's the small. It's just eating and drinking. How often do you eat and drink? Every day. I'll come to it in a minute, Tom. I know it's coming. I'm going to get there. This guy right over here, everybody knows I don't like taquito very much. He introduced me to a restaurant. What's the name of it, friend? Yeah, there you go. It's right on Highway 41. By the way, good place. Don't go there on Monday because it's closed. Our first trip there, we went on Monday and it was closed. You say, why do you like the place? Because they have some really good, listen, pozole. Pozole blanco, white pozole, from where she's from. You say, what? I don't know what it is. It has hominy in it. Some of you are like, who? It has hominy. It's wonderful. I would rather go there because, listen, the small life is what's enjoyable. Well, I'm going to say some things to you. Tom, I'm going to come to that thing very quickly when I get there. Just a second. This talks about eating and drinking, which would also include things like cooking and serving, walking together, talking together, breathing together. It's not about gorging. It's the small life. It's the normal life. It's the day-to-day life. It's the slow-down life. Now, I'm going to say this, and I want you to hear me carefully. Pastor Warren, Pastor Warren, Pastor Warren, Pastor Warren, Pastor Warren, I want to go to Fiji. What do you think you're going to do in Fiji? Except eat, drink, enjoy beauty. By the way, I'm going to say this. This is the game changer if you have any Christianity. I'm all for you. I hope you get to go to Fiji. I hope you get to go to Rome. I hope you get to go up the Nile and see the sights of Egypt. But you know what you're going to find? You've got to slow down and enjoy eating, drinking, the scenery, the smells, all of the... I love going through markets in different countries. You say, what? It ain't like going to Jewel. You walk in there, the aromas of different things they're selling. I love that. By the way, that's a small world. He's telling you, you want to be happy? Look at me. If you can be happy here, you'll be happy in Fiji. If you can be happy here doing small things, you can be happy doing big things. If you can be happy right here, going down, by the way, don't do it today, please. Wait till the summer or spring. Go down to the lakeshore. Get yourself a sub sandwich. Get yourself some chips. Get yourself something to drink. And sit down there on the lake and enjoy it. No, no, no. I got it. By the way, I'm all for you going to Rome. I hope you get to go to Rome. I hope you get to go to Greece. I hope you get to go to all those places. You'll be just as miserable as you are today because you're missing what makes those places special. Small. Pastor Clark, you told the story, but then your brother told it better. His mother made a strange concoction. Well, his mother, you know, Pastor Clark grew up part of his life in Korea. They like kimchi. Now, this is weird. I grew up in southwestern Illinois. I never heard the word kimchi. If you would have said kimchi, I'd have thought you were cursing at me. Okay? I like kimchi too. But his mother would take piece of bread, put butter on it, another piece of bread, put butter on it, put kimchi in the middle and eat a kimchi sandwich. But that wasn't the worst. Dan told me he would put, look at me, peanut butter on two pieces of bread and put kimchi in the peanut butter sandwich. Can I tell you what, friend? Some of you aren't listening. You think you're going to be happy one day when you finally... Oh, shut up. See this woman here? She's a nicer person than me. You don't have to say amen. It's a given, okay? It's obvious. We have laughed so hard in the airport in Cancun watching white, dumb people who went to Cancun. By the way, they didn't see any Mexicans. God knows you don't go to Cancun to see Mexicans. They didn't eat at a Mexican. No, 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 no. They went to Cancun to lie on the beach. And you go, and when you're flying back, we've had 2 weeks of beauty, peace. I've been to El Mirador. It's in the Yucatan Peninsula. It's a small restaurant. You drive up on the top of a hill. It's up on the, and you're looking at everything. You can spend hours there. And you know what they're doing? Getting drunk, passing out, getting their bodies roasted, but they're happy. And you, Jenny, hundreds of people miserable, angry at each other. You know why? You find meaning, look at me, in the small life. Eating, drinking. I'm going to run out of time. I'm going to just do, this sermon is not finished, but it's going to be quick. Now, the guy you're looking at, I have managed to make my wife and my mother mad at me in three photos. Tom, show the first one. You like peanut butter. Now, you remember, because of my pre-diabetes, I don't do sugar. And I don't see myself as a cheater or not cheater. I don't do sugar. Do you understand? You just don't do it. Simple. But boy, I like peanut butter. Go ahead, Tom. Do me a favor. Show the other one first. This is one that my mother would be mad at. You know why she'd be mad at that picture? Two reasons. Jenny, what's the first one? It's got to be perfect to the inch. My mother, every piece of the bread has to be buttered. Butter, whatever it is. If it's mayonnaise, it's like, Mom, you spent 37 minutes putting the mayonnaise on that piece of bread. Just eat it. I just slop it on. And secondly, she likes it thin. I like it thin too. Can you tell? Now let's look at the next. That makes my mother mad. This makes my wife mad. Just John, you know why it makes my wife mad? You have any idea? What am I going to do with that butter, peanut butter? Thank you, brother. And then, listen, for all of you ladies, I'm going to put that knife back in that jar, too. Three or four times. Emily, don't get nervous. Emily, don't get nervous. You know how the problem is? I have my own bottle of peanut butter. Can I tell you something? I'd rather do that than go to the restaurant that you're thinking, whoa, if I go here, I'm somebody. Life is enjoyed in the small life. Look at me. If you enjoy the small life, you go to Machu Picchu. By the way, Machu Picchu is phenomenal. It is, I told this old guy over here this morning, it looks just like it looks in pictures. It's the only place I've ever been, identical. But can I say something? You know what you remember about Machu Picchu? You remember those small little things. The places you just sat down and said, let me just soak this in for a while. Or there's a restaurant right up from our hotel. The first day when you get there, you're at 12,000 feet. When you walk out at 12,000 feet, this is your problem. You can't breathe. You walk up the hill and there's a place there that I can irritate my son today because he took me there. There's a good pizza place there. Pizza. Why? I'm with Jenny. She's with me. We're relaxed. We're enjoying small life. Look at me in the eyes. There are people in this room. You're happy if you go on a cruise. I think you're missing everything about life. The cruise is just a new venue for more small life. Hello? Eating. Look at me. Eating with the people you love. This guy has a birthday. He doesn't know it. Sooner or later, he and I and his wife and mine, we're going to go out to eat. Why? Because we do that around our birthdays. You say, do you go to a special place? It isn't about that. It's about going out with my friend, talking, eating, small life. Can I say this? Some of us are chasing nonsense. And you don't enjoy the small life, so you don't enjoy the big life. Can't enjoy anything. Look in your notes. I don't have time to go over it. I knew I was going to run out of time, and I apologize for that. Look down at the bottom under the third point. I'm not worried about missing the sermon, friends, because these exact ideas will be repeated in chapter 3, chapter 5, chapter 7, chapter 9. You keep getting repeated. I just want you to notice verse 24 and 26. The third point, by the way, is enjoy the good Lord. Why? He says there's nothing better for a man than he should eat and drink and that he should make his soul enjoy in his labor. He says, this also I saw, listen, that it is from what? The hand of God. Friend, there's a lady in this room that I like. You know, you or anybody that knows me knows I like Sonia. Sweet Sonia. By the way, this lady is a cook. I don't even like her son because he gets to eat that food all the time. Sonia, I want to say something to you. We got to get over to your place because I know I got to have some fry jack, first of all. But you know what I like the most, sister? Are you all listening? I like the fact that Sonia thinks, plans, and prepares the meal for me. Do you understand that the living God plans and prepares for you? Look at me. As from the hand of God? Do you hear that? Here's how you find meaning. I'll give you all 3 points. You find meaning in the small life. Enjoy the small life. You find meaning and enjoy your honest, honorable labor in working. By the way, I didn't say in making money. I said working. And thirdly, you find it in a good God, the good Lord, who, I'm not going to read the verses, I'm summarizing, who literally this comes. Sonia, I can see you're so much similar to my mother, different background, different food, because my little mother's hands, I can still see her preparing stuff out of love for us. And that's what you do. And I hope your son is not cabeza dura or cabeza hueca, even worse. I'm thinking should be thankful that a mother takes her hands and prepares food. And can I say it to both of you and all of you, and I'm done. God prepares everything for us. That's where we find it at, folks. Enjoy the small things. Enjoy your labor, the work itself. Enjoy the good Lord who gives it to you. By the way, verse 26, 3 times says, He gives it to you. That's life. Let's pray together. Father, thank you for this time. I love it, the small stuff. Every person I've ever met can be so happy with the small stuff. So if they're introduced to big stuff, they enjoy that too. While many people are waiting around for the big stuff and they're miserable all the time, it's those small blessings that you, as if with your own hand, prepare for us. You give us eating and drinking. I can't say anything more. There is nothing more beautiful. Or we can spend a life chasing stuff on a quest. Of course, we're not as wise as Solomon. We don't actually give ourselves a quiz. We just keep doing the same dumb thing over and over. Help us this morning, I ask. In Jesus' name, amen.